Over the Line, in association with OxyGeneration. OxyGeneration is used for sports injury, which is covered by many clubs or schools' insurance, subject to conditions. See OxyGeneration.com for more.
Now, I think the Leinster Minor Hurling Final is going to go Offaly's way. The latest I have is 22 points to 12, and that's 2 minutes into added time. We will have another look at that momentarily, but that is the way, the last scoreline that I have on it, and I think that's probably going to wrap it up. We'll give you a final scoreline when you get it. There's great interest in what's happening across
there channel. There seems to be a serious injury in the game, I think.
This across channel.
Major hold-up. As Arstil, club that were disowned by one of their more prominent supporters that has been a guest on this show for many a time, that they had no chance of making the Champions League.
Yes.
Now the same man is looking for Wi-Fi passwords, he's in contact with people at the game and so on and so forth. And all I will say is, oh ye of little faith.
And how are you, Keane O'Connell?
I'm good.
At least they have a chance to get into Europe more than somebody belonging to somebody else.
not alone will we get into Europe, Mike. We'll get into parts of the Europe that's under sanctions. Probably half the games won't take place. I'm hoping to get one of the great places in the world I'd love to go is a place called Turkmenistan, and I'd say the way we're going we'll probably have a game out there, Mike, next season, so I'll get there.
I'm sure they'll Ryanair put on direct flights for you, George.
Yeah. We'll get there via somewhere, Mike, don't worry.
Pre-season friendlies, yeah, something like that. Anyway, Mike Rafferty and Keane O'Connell, thanks for joining us. Good to see you, lads. We've had a hell of a weekend, particularly with Galway beating Laois in hurling fairly comfortably. Okay, Laois put up a spirited performance for about 15-20 minutes, and the inevitable just happened. They still put up a decent score now, did Laois, but Galway were absolutely firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, and on 14 different scorers, Gerry, and I suppose it's something we've touched on before. I suppose a lot of lessons were learned in the last time the round robin took place, when Galway were knocked out of the championship, and maybe the fact that they didn't beat Carlow as convincingly as other counties did ultimately cost them. So I think that everyone in Galway was kind of forewarned about the implications and not putting teams away. And in fairness to Galway, the wins that they got against Westmeath and Laois were emphatic. To especially the Westmeath game a couple of weeks ago, having frittered away a 6-point lead against Wexford, Galway hit the ground running, did most of the damage in the first half, but to score 2 goals and 37 points is just a remarkable feat.
And they have Dublin, Mike, in next weekend. They probably need to get something out of it, but Wexford seem to be in a complete spin after only drawing with Westmeath.
I mean, that was unbelievable. It was 2:15 to 21 points, something like that. I mean, I couldn't believe. I mean, not only me, but I'm sure everybody who saw that wouldn't have believed it. But I mean, look, I think that's fantastic. No more than that Leinster minor final tonight. You know, two teams, what we call not major powers in the game, that are getting results like that. And I mean, I think that can be nothing only good for the game. But then at the same time, you just sort of question, you know, the likes of Laois and Westmeath, and there was playing, you know, what we call the premier hurling teams. I mean, there's a million miles apart. And I mean, it's almost, I know, Keane, you referred to it there, of, you know, Galway got caught a bit last year, they weren't going to make a mistake this year, which of course is the professional and the proper way to take it. But is hockey in these teams any good for anybody except your scoring difference? You know.
Well, it's proven in one thing here, lads, is that Galway put the Westmeath to the sword in the end. And it brings in your very valid point. Galway didn't do that when we lost out a couple of years ago when we didn't beat Carlow by
enough,
basically. Yeah. Westmeath technically have put Galway into the knockout stages of the All-Ireland Championship, because Wexford can't catch Galway no matter what happens to Galway against Dublin. So therefore, at worst, we're into the round robin, the playoff section. I think Galway and Dublin will be a cracking match next week.
I think Dublin might be coming as underdogs in some people's eyes, but we haven't been putting Dublin away for a good few years now. They've always been one of Galway's nemesis.
Since the 2013 Leinster final, Dublin And even before that, they'd rattled Galway a couple of times, but they have a good record in the last decade against Galway. They won the last couple of championship matches, and they're also going to be hurting because they were soundly beaten by Kilkenny. So now their year is on the line. So for Galway too, will want to win because
the momentum
and to get into the Leinster final counts for a lot, because I suppose
you have a straight run
through there, and you're into the All-Ireland quarterfinals at least. If you lose on Saturday, maybe results elsewhere might determine that Galway still reach the Leinster final, but still you want to be in charge of your own destiny, and Galway are unbeaten up to now, and I think that they'll want to push on. I can remember even another, it was a dead rubber game in the stadium a number of years ago, and at that stage Dublin still drew with Galway, if memory serves me correct.
It was a drawn game
in the stadium, and at that stage like Dublin were essentially out of the championship, so they'll definitely want to stay in the championship, obviously. So they're going to be coming to Salt Hill to win.
They haven't been beaten you know, in the last 2 years, only by Kilkenny.
Dublin haven't been beaten by anybody else.
You have the sideshow as well, Jerry. You have Matty Kinney coming back to Galway. You know, a man who I no doubt probably coveted the Galway job somewhere along the line himself. You have Henry Shefflin moving Galway on. I think it was a huge, huge, I won't say turning point, but certainly a huge lift to the Galway squad and to the appointment of Shefflin to get that victory over Brian Cody, because the reverse, if Kilkenny had trimmed Galway, we would have had the negative.
Yeah, but lads, the fact that Henry is the manager, has that taken a little bit of a focus off the players, both individually and collectively, where everybody talks about Henry Shefflin's team, and a disproportionate amount of the focus is on Henry compared to the players. That helped them.
Probably suits them.
But it suits. I mean, the manager always says, look, I'll take the pressure. But look, you go out, you play in a team of 15 players or whatever sport you play. There's lads who'll be nervous before games, there's lads that'll have tension before games, and there's lads who'll go out and play the game as if it's just a puck out in the back garden. So you have all sorts of attitudes and mindsets going into the game. I mean, I think the most positive one to take is that, you know, Shefflin is unproven, of course, as a county manager. Did it with Ballyhale in club hurling, and of course with Kilkenny. But he's of such a stature, the players are going to look up to him, and they're going to be inspired by him. And if they're good enough to be in his squad, they're good enough to be playing for Galway. But I don't think it's going to put any added pressure. I think
I think it's supposed to. I can remember the first game in the Walsh Cup against Offaly in Ballinasloe, and you had 3,000 or 4,000. It was at a time where COVID restrictions were beginning to ease, and it just, I think, even going back to the Fitzgibbon, the amount of guys from Galway UCG or NUIG playing GMIT in a Fitzgibbon Cup semi-final, 27 or 28 guys starting from Galway. All these things kind of feed into, I suppose, an energy and a momentum, and I think that Galway need to tap into that, because of course you have like the experienced players, and Galway have lost like an all time great and Joe Canning and Aidan Hart, another really really good servant to Galway over 10-15 years spell. So you lost them two guys, and now you still have lots of good established players, the Conor Coneys, Johnny Cones, who've given a lot to Galway, but you also have a new wave of talent coming through, and the fact that Henry Shefflin is steering the ship is only a good thing.
I think, just not to spoil Keel's, Newcastle 1, Arsenal 0. And this could be defining evening in the Champions League destination.
I told you that 3 or 4 weeks ago.
You did, now you're coming through, the confidence to come in. But going back to the hurling, yeah, look, lads, it is. And there's also, we talk about Galway and Dublin, they say there's no pressure on Galway, they're in the knockout. The direct, Tomás Mannion spoke here earlier on about the Galway footballers. The direct route is the most positive route
to go because you're confident.
So Galway, I think, will be going. Look, they'll naturally be going out hell for leather. But there's an intriguing match as well, lads, between Kilkenny and Wexford. Wexford, would you agree, have regressed since the draw with Galway?
Yeah.
Slightly?
But what happened with Wexford? Obviously it did, but I mean, Galway let them back into that game.
Did he, yes. and it was a false dawn, really, with like a couple of very questionable refereeing decisions on that occasion.
When it comes to the black and amber, the Yellow Bellies will be up for it, and there'll be no doubt that Wexford would be firing everything at that match against Kilkenny, and it might actually go other direction.
Yeah. Am I correct? Did Wexford have a good National League campaign initially?
Yeah, and so did Waterford.
I was just going to make that point. I mean, if you take the contrast the last couple of years, Limerick just bet the worst team in the group, and you know they were generally beaten by everybody, right? But as you can see, they're warming up now to championship action thoroughly, right? And but the point, Wexford and Waterford, you know, they were the standard bearers in the National League. Obviously, I won't say they wanted to peak for that. Mm-hmm. But what has happened to them?
There's a new calendar as well, Mike. I think that that the championship is earlier this year as well, and so I think that a lot of teams, and you could probably cast Limerick out of this particular conversation because they're a decorated team or whatever. But everyone else, I think, is getting used. Well, everyone's getting used to the new calendar, if you want to call it that. And it's funny because I got a text off one of my friends yesterday, and he said the exact same thing. He's like, the league, if you look at it, Wexford and Waterford, your exact point. Mm. Now, you know, a month or two later, like, the narrative has shifted completely.
Mm. Mm. You'd wonder how that can be. You know, I mean, obviously they have prepared well for the National League. Maybe
the hurling league isn't as relevant as a football league.
Oh, of course it's not. I mean, it's obviously saying that.
And
but
obviously these teams are targeting the championship, and they know how to do it from the past. I mean, the Munster Championship is now looking like a very intriguing situation. Cork are back in the mix.
Yeah.
Tipperary might ruin their success. Clare are in the final against Limerick, like it or not. So the battle is for
the laughable thing about it, sure, is that the key match in all this championship was probably yesterday, because if Cork can beat Tipperary, irrespective of what happens to Waterford,
they'll go through.
Cork will go through because they won the head-to-head. And as a wise man in Limerick said to me, he says, and I asked him about the Limerick preparation for the championship, he says they're like their sponsors' racehorses, as they develop nice and easily, he says, and they deliver on the big day. They just, from the league, they just looked at it, we'll beat the worst team in it, don't mind, we'll stay in Division 1.
Now Clare showed a few cracks in them yesterday, in fairness. I watched that game and I think
thought Tipperary, wasn't it, in the previous
for a while.
And also the added bonus for the Clare people was, like, they didn't have a great record in Cusick Park ever. There's a surreal atmosphere in Cusick Park, which is marvellous to see in the championship, and to see the games in Walsh Park as well, in Waterford.
Small compact, right?
I heard them talking about old fashioned Munster championship hurling.
Yes,
that's the way it was, that the crowd were right up on the sideline.
The sending off, lads.
Of Garage Hegarty?
Yes.
I think it was a little bit harsh. I think
some of their players have done worse and managed to stay on the field of play.
I think both yellow cards were questionable. I know he pulled on a sideline ball with a man standing beside it, but the man standing beside it was the one I would have been in with the yellow card to before. But then Garage has this thing in his head that he has to show who's the master. The other one was absolutely nothing in it. I shouldn't even have been a free. Probably he may have put his hand on his shoulder, but it wasn't a yellow card. But that's, reputation goes in front of some people, and the same as Austin Gleeson.
I was just going to bring the point of Gleeson. Now, that's his second sending off in recent times.
And again, you'd have to question the first yellow card in that particular one. The messing, rolling around the ground, it was a Cork player, it was daft stuff, and he instigated that. You could see it on the telly, because he started dragging the Cork man back, because Cork were getting a free anyway. But it's daft stuff, really. Me and red cards after the weekend.
What will be the consequences?
I think they're both double yellows.
Would Gleeson not face second sending?
I mean, it's a second sending off.
It's a second sending off.
I was going to say, is there a punishment, an extra punishment for that? Or
he may get a game. Well,
possibly, but don't you know in your heart and soul, lads, that they'll end up on a Saturday night at 11:59 and 48 seconds and someone will have found the flaw or some fella that didn't put the father over the eye in the official
report.
The official explanation, which has to be asked Gaelga, and he'll be exonerated.
Yeah, but there was I didn't actually read the article, but there was something in some newspaper recently about that exact subject matter about the GAA and the rules and the non-rules, because as soon as a rule is made,
there's about six appeals.
Yeah,
you know,
no matter what you do,
to the end of it.
Yeah, but it's just a pity, because I think it just takes the scenario and it ruins it. I mean, I know in other sports, if you're sent off in a game, one thing is, I know, you're automatically suspended for the next game.
Well, I think the really daft one was the Donegal Tyrone one, where Donegal got their players back and Tyrone didn't contest.
No, Donegal didn't contest.
Donegal and Armagh. Donegal and Armagh. But that's
set a precedent. And Armagh appealed,
That set a precedent, really, in the sense that no matter what happens, they'll all throw back to that, how fellas got off. Mm. And I think the article you're referring to, Mike, was in The Examiner, where the author of the article likened that to what happens in soccer, where two yellow cards is a one match suspension, a straight red is a three. Mm. And also the appeal, there is an appeal in the sanction system that prevails in rugby, where a player, if he is unfortunate enough to have been red carded, appears before a panel, states his case. If the suspension is if he could be told that it may have been not that mitigating and that he might get a 1 week suspension, and if he's playing on the Sunday, he's lucky, he gets away, he does play on the Sunday. If it's a game ban, if it's a two game ban, he takes it. There's no appeal. End of story. And I think this crack of appealing and then appealing to somebody else and fellas committees sort of to it's you know in your heart.
But there's no acceptance. That was the point.
The only thing I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but the only thing is, in fairness to Waterford, Austin Gleeson was put off in the league semi-final for Waterford when they were hammering Wexford, and they didn't appeal it. They just dealt with it. You go back to John Milan, famously put off in the 2004 Munster final, and he took his punishment. Now I know you could give me 55 cases otherwise, but I think that certain times you just have to take the hit and realise. But then other times, guys have been put off in the wrong at every level in every sport. Too.
If it's totally in the wrong, but there are appeals for incorrect cards, say in soccer as well. But it's just one of these little things that just sort of always seems to drag on.
Over the Line, in association with Oxy Generation. Oxy Generation helps to rapidly reduce pain, inflammation, and infection by healing injured tissue. See oxygeneration.com for more.
By the way, the final score on that Leinster minor hurling final, Offaly 21 points, Laois 13. That's the way that one finished. And Newcastle are leading, of course, by a goal to nil against Arsenal. And Huddersfield and Luton are still trying to open each other up. And that's going to extra time and penalties, probably, as a lot of these things do. George, you're going to make a point about football.
Yeah, and it's interesting, we go back to what Tomás Mannion said again. He spoke about the confidence that the Galway team and Division 2 has had a benefit for Galway and Roscommon, and also, it must be said, for Derry. Now, we go back when Galway went up to Oneg and literally trashed Derry. It was unbelievable. And we were saying, oh, Derry, this is the word. But you look, Derry have reached their first Ulster final, lads, in 11 years. Mm-hmm. Now, we always, and we've spoken a lot about it, the unpredictability of a lot of the Ulster games. Mm. But Derry have come in, not, I wouldn't say under the radar. They've done their business. They were looking out to be promoted in Division 2. But they have really seemed to have found a winning formula. They have fair beaten to Monaghan.
But I think going back the years before this, there was problems within Derry senior football, and they were finding it very, very difficult to get club players to play for the county. Mm. And the same thing is going on in Down at the moment, where the Kilcoo players are not playing for the county. And you cannot play. You cannot expect a county to be going well without their best players, and it seems Derry have their best players back.
They do, and in fairness to Rory Gallagher, like, he's done a really good job, and they've, like, Derry football, let's be frank about it. Like, it had drifted where they'd gone down through the divisions, even had a stint in Division 4. But it's funny that sometimes it talk about winning and momentum, and that they just, I suppose, have improved slightly, and then all of a sudden, it's probably a problem that Galway might have had going back 7-8 years ago, where there were certain stages where you could argue that the best footballers available to Galway weren't playing with Galway at that particular time, and the same thing was happening in Derry, happening in Down now, as you mentioned, Gerry. But I think once you start getting on a bit of a roll, people start to begin to believe. But at the same stage, Derry, like, are a county with a proud history, and Rory Gallagher, obviously a really experienced manager at every level of the game, and might have been just a good
connection. One passionate boy.
That's what you need.
You go back 3 years, and it was vibes and fellas you might know from Derry, and they tell you there was a better team not playing for Derry than what was actually doing duty in the championship. And look, I don't buy all that sort of crap in counties. You should be proud enough to play for your county, as you would be for your club or your province.
It should be, but George, if they won't do it.
Sometimes it all depends on who's the manager.
But a lot of it too, Mike, it considers that people who have no involvement in football, more as a bureaucratic or an organisational level, that some people in a high office take a view and punish certain clubs, and then they all take a hump, and you can't blame the players for that. But it is very good to see that Derry and Donegal in an Ulster final. I mean, they're a physical side.
You could fancy Derry very easily,
and you look to Leinster then, you know, people were touting up that Meath were going to shake up the Queerlands, you know, but
no,
would the standard is poor. I mean, outside Dublin, the standard is poor.
It is poor.
I think there's a flutter in Kildare
for an hour might keep Dublin.
Yeah, they're not going to look.
Occupied.
I mean, if you take the under 20 game, you know, yeah. I mean, Kildare were well beaten by Tyrone, you know, and that's, they're the future, more or less. But I can't.
And despite all our views here, that, and particularly mine, that the current Dublin management doesn't have it, and maybe he doesn't enjoy the full confidence of everybody in the squad or whatever, when he's tactical loose and so on and so forth, these fellas could arrive in an All Ireland quarter final, not having to break sweat.
Yeah.
But I remember months ago, George, here, around the time they were relegated, and I remember saying that, like, if you look at it, of course Dublin are, they have nowhere near the depth that they had in their, in the Salad years or whatever, but right now they'll still have a team that can compete for the All-Ireland.
Yeah, their attitude is superb.
Like their efficiency levels, they barely missed a chance in the game. They're so ruthless as well. They're definitely not as strong as they were, but it'll still take a really good team to beat them.
I mean, Cavan's there is a big stat, a huge. Yeah. You know, I mean, if you just compare with clubs, I mean, if you just go back to the Alex Ferguson days of Man United, right? And when he left, it's like, I mean, Gavin was such a good manager, right? I mean, whoever followed him,
it was a poison chalice.
It was a poison chalice, right? And, you know, Farrell has, you know, big shoes to step into, but the amount of players that he has lost from an experience. Now, he still is the core of a serious side, but the one thing about Dublin is, you know, they always kept a value. Even during Gavin's days, there was always a fresh face. If you went from All Ireland to All Ireland, there was always two or three players that new guys in that team, whether the talent is still there or not.
Where are Galway at the moment in the pecking order, or should we wait until after the Connacht final to see?
Should wait until after the Connacht final in one way, but Galway are definitely a team on the rise, Gerry, is what I think a lot of people would say. The fact that they got promoted from Division 2, the fact that they beat Mayo, and let's be realistic, Mayo are still serious All-Ireland contenders. Like, I know you'll have to wait to see what the draw throws up in the qualifiers, but Galway beat Mayo, who were in the last couple of All-Ireland finals with a lot of good players, and I think the fact that Galway have brought through a lot of younger players over the last two or three years, and Park Joyce and his management team deserve credit for that, because they have integrated a lot of younger players who are now benefiting, I think, too, from the fact that they've had a full league and full round of matches.
That said, where the pressure was on the previous management to stay in Division 1 because you were in Division 1, goes back to our assumption. We've seen the COVID and that had, we'll say, put a quick halt to the progress Galway had made in that league campaign. You had a truncated league campaign last year where they went down. I keep going back to it, this year Division 2 possibly couldn't come at a better time for the overall development of this squad of players over the last number of years. You know, this squad of players got the winning habit in Division 2, and I think in the fullness of time, if we do hopefully win a Connacht Championship in a couple of weeks' time, that will stand to them. And I think that has to be, I think, stressed that it was actually a blessing in disguise.
But just take the two teams in this final, right? Mm-hmm. Roscommon are not going to have any fear.
No, not at all, no.
Whatsoever. Now, looking at odds, etc., you'd fear that Galway just have to turn up to win it. But I was just talking to somebody from Roscommon yesterday. We were just talking about the match, etc. He used to be involved one time. And, you know, he marked out a few, Galway key forwards like Comer and Shane Walsh and Paul Conroy, you know. And obviously he put them up there as the standard bearers. But he said, look, outside that, Roscommon have nothing to fear. He says, we have this, we have that, we have the other. So Roscommon certainly will make a game of it. I well remember being in McHale Park, can't remember the year, when Sligo were something like 1-7 to beat Roscommon.
2010.
In a Connacht final, right?
They had beaten Galway and Mayo.
They had beaten Galway and Mayo, and they were on their way to a Connacht title. And your man, Donal Shine, put over a free from out on the left wing. I can still picture it to this day. I was behind the goal, you know. So underdogs, the day
is a 50-50 game, like,
yes,
regardless of the,
and they're
like,
no big dog underdogs,
like, they've beaten Galway twice. This is going to be the fifth kind of final in 7 years involving Galway and Roscommon, and they've played a lot of Division 1 football. I know they've gone up and down maybe a bit more than Galway, but they've most of their players will have played Division 1. They've huge experience at
there's a lot of guys in that Roscommon team that are around now.
And if you take Pearce's players, didn't they, their success in that level, so they're not.
Speaking about Sligo, the draw for the Tailteann Cup was made this morning, split into north and south. Again, I think that should have been straight
open
draw,
yeah.
Open draw. Wexford and Offaly and Wicklow and Waterford, two preliminary rounds in the southern section, and they'll actually meet, the winners of both of those will meet in the next round. Carlow versus Tipp and Laois versus Westmeath. Looking at the ones in the northern section, Longford and Fermanagh, I think that might be never have happened in the championship before. They would have met in leagues over the years. Leitrim and Antrim. That'll be an interesting game because Antrim have improved as well. Sligo in London, in Markovitch Park, and Cavan and Down to eliminate one of those in the first round. As a Sligo man, are you happy with London?
I think you'd have to be. As another Sligo man said to me today, he says, God, he says, well, obviously we call it the Tailteann Cup, would be in All Ireland. He says we could be the first winners of an All Ireland to beat two non-Irish teams. The Bet New York, remember,
right,
in the championship. But these type of games, you can't take them for granted. Sligo were lucky. Just to the closing stages, they got past New York, and Leitrim, were just lucky to get over London in the first place.
The one thing I would say,
it's a banana skin. Let's put it that way. And if a team isn't tuned in for that game,
And that was the question I was going to ask you. Did you get any feedback from home as to how they're going to approach the Tailteann Cup?
Well, I heard an interview from the manager. All right, and they are from the went out one time. They went out of Connacht. That was their focus. So, there were some teams there who said, actually, look, we don't know whether we'll enter it, or we don't know whether we'll do this. No, the Sligo focus. Now, look, football isn't exactly at the highest level in Sligo. It's a huge challenge. But this is an even field, right? And it's an opportunity to win a national title. That's not to say Sligo will win it or anything like that, but
Cavan have been put in as favourites. That's probably fair.
It's fair on their league form and the fact that they went close against Donegal in the championship, but maybe of all the two counties, maybe the two most decorated counties in it, Cavan and Down are going to play one another, so I suppose you have traditional powers there. On form, Cavan, even though they were in Division 4, they won Division 4 and are obviously Ulster champions a couple of years ago, and Mickey Graham, the shrewd operator, so they're probably the team to beat in it. Nonetheless, a lot of teams will believe that they can go a distance in it, and particularly if you win the first game.
Yeah.
If you win your first game, it kind of opens up for you there. And like, if the likes of Offaly were beaten by Wexford in the Leinster Championship.
Have a chance to redeem themselves now.
Ironically, they might be better off winning the Tailteann Cup game because they have a chance of winning silverware in that. So I think it's a good competition because it's like you won't have the semi-finals and the final at Croke Park. So there's carrot there for players, and I think that I just hope that the media and people kind of rowing behind
I think that's one thing. There's a lot of the national media beginning to give this, I would say it's a brutal thing to say, but probably stabbing the competition in the back. You just look at the success that the various graded competitions have been in hurling.
Yeah.
And I know hurling is coming from a different background where there was normally only 8 to 9 teams capable of winning an All-Ireland senior hurling and to see teams being treated as kind of
but the teams in the Joe McDonough want to win it, and of course the Laurie Maher,
the Laurie Maher, the Nicky Rackard. And I, as I said here a couple of weeks ago, I was at a two of those finals on one occasion at Croke Park, and to see the intensity and the passion that they brought to the game, and it is their All-Ireland, which is great. And I think that the Tailteann Cup has to be given a chance, but I think it needs huge support from everybody across the board, because let's support the competition, because at the end of the day it's about people playing sport, and it's not nice to see teams getting turfed every second week at the lower end of the spectrum. It is it's important as well that there's more to life than Kerry, Dublin, Galway, Mayo, Donegal.
But the Cailleam Inches, even if you take the Christy Ring, the Joe McDonough, those, the Cailleam Inches in any of the Nationals, it's still very small.
They're much better than the first division of the SSE or
Absolutely.
League.
Where the results just go in. Once you're out of the top league.
I agree to an extent, but I think that it
will be slightly better because there's space there in the calendar for it. In that you're going to be going up against weekends where you'll have provincial finals and that, but there still won't be the same amount of All-Ireland qualifiers that would have been taking place in a traditional year or previously. I totally agree with what George said. I think everyone needs to give it a chance. You look at the hurling, just look at Mayo in hurling, for example. They played in they won the Nicky Rackard last year. They're going to be in the Christy Ring Cup final this weekend. Now, they had a bad league campaign in the intervening spell, but still in their championship campaigns, they've gone up to the next level and reached the final straight away. So they're obviously making progress in some way. So
that's people are trying. Unfortunately, they weren't allowed to train on the county ground, but they are, the people behind the scenes are making ground. And if you go back to what you said about the All-Ireland qualifiers,
Mayo were allowed back
because they're embarrassed into it.
The whole stupid stuff. I think concept of the Tailteann Cup is to improve football in the weaker counties.
And there's a couple of other games there, George, that, you know, Leash and Westmeath, for example, they'd be very, very close. There wouldn't be a lot between those two. That'd be a ding-dong affair. I'm interested to see Carlo and Tipperary. Now, Carlo have gone back a little bit in years, and Tipperary have gone back a little bit as well. Yeah. But they're neighbours. They're quite likely to throw up a decent game. Apart, we've already spoken about Cavan and Down, Longford and Fermanagh. I don't think there's going to be an awful lot between those. So all you really need to do is throw up a couple of really good ding-dong affairs in this, and then the national media will sit up and say, that was a cracker. And maybe there's more crackers in this tournament.
But the identity is to be able to play in a competition that you're capable of progressing in number one, and hopefully winning. Like, for instance, if you're going back to the old backdoor system where Wicklow were knocked out in the first round of the championship, I know they had a victory, but then they're knocked out. And then after that one victory, they find themselves up against Mayo, who are potential still All-Ireland contenders. Mm-hmm. It's not right, but I think that this grasp of this competition is going to progress. It's going to take 2 to 3 years, but I think everybody has to give it that opportunity to become successful and not just gripe against it straight away. I think is wrong, and I think that the hurling side of things is certainly working, albeit, as Mike says, they may not be getting the same Cailleam Inches, but let's hope that the Tailteann Cup does work and it allows those counties, because at the end of the day, the guy playing inter-county football, be it in Leitrim, London, Waterford, Limerick or whatever, is putting in the same effort.
Is there likely to be a number of these guys who will be heading off to the States before this competition starts?
Well, I mean, the preliminary round of this is on this weekend.
Yeah, the two preliminary rounds. Right? And the first round proppers then are on the following weekend.
But the college exams, I don't think, are over yet. So I would...
And by then you'll have 8 teams will be out of it.
Yeah, you know, so there might always be a few guys, but I think if guys have spent their time in the county panels up to now, they're not going to drop out with just a game or two away.
For those of you who are Huddersfield Town fans, Huddersfield Town are leading Luton by a goal to nil, and they're 4 minutes into added time at the end of the game. 94 minutes gone in that one. So Luton Town, who were a lot of people's choice of a team that might come straight back up to the, or not straight back up, but come back up to the Premier League, that looks like it's gone out the window.
Yeah, he's done a great job, your man Nathan Jones, with a small budget in the Championship compared to other clubs, but Huddersfield,
and that's full time. That is the
83 minutes into the game. It's in James's Park, and it's advantage Spurs. Newcastle 1, Arsenal 0. And look, I will be honest with you, I'd rather see Arsenal in the Champions League than Spurs.
I hope they've packed their bags to go on holidays by the time they meet us in a week's time.
But for a lot of those clubs, you know, who go up, I mean, it's a yo-yo situation.
It is,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, obviously it's good to get into the top flight. But I mean, if you take Norwich, you know, I mean, Burnley.
You look at any of the players that have been loyal to Fulham over the years, Mike. If they ever leave football, they'll get a job working in the escalator in the Empire State Building, because they go up and down every second year, and that's what just happened.
Over the Line, in association with OxyGeneration. OxyGeneration is used for sports injury, which is covered by many clubs or schools' insurance, subject to conditions. See OxyGeneration.com for more.
Oh yeah, welcome back to the programme, our final furlong, as I say. And we spoke a little bit about soccer a little bit earlier on. But there's a lot more to say about soccer. Next Friday night, Galway United at home to Athlone Town. The following Friday night at home to Cork. This weekend just gone, a fantastic victory, which saw them winning 4-0. Mike, I know Keane is equally as active and as passionate about it.
He went on the road to Wexford.
But this run of six games undefeated, conceding very few goals, and now beginning to pop a few into the net themselves at the other end, are we getting carried away with ourselves? Or is there real light and hope at the end of the tunnel?
You meet people who know the result, okay, and maybe mightn't be football fans, and they tend to get carried away. I think the form certainly is improving. I don't think one can get carried away in any shape or fashion, in the sense that the more recent results of against Wexford, now I know they only drew 1-1 in Terryland in the first time round. Cove are a poor team that most teams are beating, so you can't. But I think the victory in Limerick, where they came from 2-2 to beat Treaty in an absolute cracking game, got good goals. Right, there was nothing lucky about any of the goals. Got good goals. I think that inspired huge confidence. But I also got to think is that, you know, Galway United are a full-time professional setup, right? And we always knew that they were going to be challenging for honours and challenging for at the top of the end of the table. Like last year, they had struggled early on and they eventually made their way up.
And we're not even halfway yet.
No, but we're where we expect to be, and that's just the bottom line. I think performance are improving. I said it the last time I was on here, when the window opens, it wouldn't surprise me if he went out and maybe if there was a striker available to sign a striker. I do think, I don't know whether it was his intention at the beginning of the season that Stephen Walsh was going to be his number one striker, because I wouldn't have thought that was his original choice, because obviously he signed Manu Dimas and Jordan Adeyemo, two lads who came in and, you know, have got a few goals, three for me. Dimas and Jordan has got one. You know, Wilson hasn't really hit the net either. They're all playing little bit parts, but Stephen Walsh has been the main man. So, but look, the form is good, but also you got to remember, you were down there the night in Athlone where we played them the last time, where we got a flick header and a back heel to win it 2-1, and that was a struggle. So we've seen games, Jerry, at the other end of the extreme where Galway United have won and been less than impressive, but I would like to think that a lot of those performances are behind them. I think they've stepped up their performances.
But the both of you lads, what I've been saying, the good thing about this is that when they're getting the opportunity to put the opposition to the sword, they're actually taking it now.
Before Keane answers that, I'll just give you, to a certain extent, yes, there were three up against Cove, all right, totally dominating the game, and they got a fourth goal in the last minute, right? Now there were three up early on against Wexford the last day, got one in the second half, and we all know goal difference is crucial, All right. And at one stage now, we were a million miles. Now, there's only seven goals in Zelder Cork. So Keane obviously was in Wexford the last day he saw that game, and probably in Cove, and will know more. But I would have thought that just in the second half, there should have been more goals available. You can...
Ish, Mike. But the only thing is, like, I don't think if you can't be in any way critical, I don't think, when you go away and win two games on an aggregate score of 8-0, maybe. But I think that I would think that Galway United's performance away to Wexford was as good a first division performance as Galway United have ever delivered in the first division. Now, I'm not saying I'm not talking about the Premier times, that they were controlled, they dominated the game, and there's just a good structure to the team, and they're picking up clean sheets at the moment. Portillas has formed a really good partnership with Killian Bruder at the back. Hemmings played a right full on Friday and was very, very assured. Alex Murphy at left full, so straight away in front of Conor Kearns, the goalkeeper. Like, that back five, particularly strong for the first division. But I think that Wexford, while they're not having a great season, have a lot of experienced League of Ireland players, players who've played at a good level. Captain Joe Manley at the back, you had other players. Now, they were down one or two, admittedly. Dinny Corcoran wasn't playing, and neither was Lorcan Fitzgerald, who'd be a kind of a vastly experienced campaigner for them. But on paper, it's a decent enough Wexford outfit, and Galway United swatted them away. And we saw that Wexford can be decent enough at Eamon DC Park, but I think that the I wouldn't say the transformation in United season, considering they only had one defeat, but they lost to Longford. They responded then by beating Cove 1-0 at home. It was an edgy enough kind of a game. Then drew with Wexford, and they picked up 4 points from a possible 9 in that run. But since then, they've won 6 in a row. Mm-hmm. And I think that the standard of football, if you want to call it that, has been decent in that 6-game winning streak, where maybe in some of the earlier wins they were quite fortunate. But I definitely think that they're generating momentum. But you have to add the caveat that the next 2 weeks are critical. Athlone will be a tricky game. They're
always tricky for Galway United.
Against Galway United, and in their last two, now they're having a bad season, but they were only marginally beaten by Cork, who got an injury time winner at Lissy Wullen a few weeks ago. They gave another spirited display when losing narrowly to Longford. So that would suggest that they're making improvements. Like, if United win, they'll equal their all-time league winning run, which is 7 wins in a row. So these things count for a lot. Because Galway United generally, go down through history, don't really deal with the weight of expectation well, Mike. And yet, if you look at the last 10-15 years, when big games at Eamon DC Park, generally
the playoff game last year was the case
in point, ultimate case in point, and it is a factor, and there's no point in shirking away from that. However, I think when John Caulfield is in charge of United, there's more of a defiance in the team than previously. I think that I think they're more dependable. You always know that you'll get a good level of performance.
Mike, his trust in the players obviously is there, and if some guy is not going well, he has no problems replacing him, and the guy that comes on generally, you know, does the job, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, he's you're looking for an opportunity in any football club where you have a squad of over 20 players. You're looking for an opportunity. I mean, probably young Ronan Manning is, you know, case. He came on in that game against Treaty, got a cracking goal. Now, obviously, he's working his way back from injury. He hasn't made a start in any game yet. I think Caulfield is just managing him, bringing on for half an hour here, half an hour there. You know, but he's the type of player that, you know, if you can get a full game out of him, who has the ability and a bit of class, in fairness. Keane touched on the back four, O'Keefe sometimes at right full instead of Hemmings, you know, is solid. It's a set unit. They're very, very familiar with one another. You know, the midfield, there's not too many changes made in that team. Now, I know Mikey Rowe is out at the minute, right? But he has a settled unit to work with. And in contrast to last season, where there were a new team, right, that had a lot... This team is a settled team with a few new faces thrown in. I would certainly agree with what you're saying. Obviously, a 6-match unbeaten run. The standard has improved. They are certainly more consistent. The point I was just making about the old second half is, you know, because of the goal difference, you know, if you get an opportunity to push on, not taken away from their wins in Cove or Wexford, but just that if the opportunity to rattle the goals.
Newcastle are now 2-0 up on Arsenal.
That is correct. Arsenal and Harrod, that's the one wisecracker I must applaud the man's nose, says a man who's Anthony Kelly, a great United supporter, says Harry Kane ain't going nowhere now. He's staying at Spurs in the Champions League. But Gerry Murphy, are you going to the Championship?
Now, that is a good question, George. We do still have the upper hand on the other two. That's Leeds United and Burnley. Burnley were beaten by Spurs with a very harsh penalty given against them. Harry Kane got the goal. I thought he kind of half scuffed it and it just got inside the post, but it got inside the post, and I think Burnley were unlucky on that one. Leeds got a very late goal to come back and draw their game against Brighton, who I think everybody looking at it would have thought Brighton had that game won. They had a couple of other chances they could have got. The Everton game frustrates me. I don't get too bothered one way or the other, but when you see again Everton being having decisions,
discipline is too terrible, Gerry.
No, it's not the discipline, George. If you have a man who the jersey in the box is literally pulled off his back, where you can see his shoulder and half his belly and the whole lot, and Michael Oliver is sitting watching him there, and he says no penalty. Then VAR come back and say we didn't see anything in it to stop the game and have him had another look at it.
But he wasn't in White Hart Lane and week of the penalty.
And well, yeah, Michael Oliver has been a known Liverpool supporter for years. And
but having, said that, so, George, the other line from VAR was, if he had given the penalty, we would not have seen any reason for it not to be given. Now, either you get off the fence or do your job properly. All of a sudden, Brentford broke and the young fella got caught in the heels of Tony and took him down. That's a red card, no doubt about it. Even though it was accidental, he was getting into a goal-scoring position. But the first decision not to give them a penalty would have probably put them 2-0 up. They would still have 11 players on the field. And they would have a really, really good chance of winning that game. The second half went bananas. I mean, Rondon's red card at the end, yeah. But, I mean, the game was done and dusted at that stage. He was just going, he was told to go in and throw yourself about the place and try and win the ball. And he just tried to win it the wrong way. But it has to be said that decisions, no more than the handball against Man City, Allen getting sent off in another game, totally wrong. And you have the referees society, I don't know what they're called over there now, coming back to apologise to Frank Lampard for the bad decision that was made.
You mentioned penalties there. I mean, I happen to see the penalty given against Burnley the other day. I mean, you know,
I would never have given that, Mike, in my day refereeing again.
I know that, but I mean, back in those days, it was hand to ball. Now, I mean, I was listening to somewhere on the radio and I just heard
the word intentional always in the laws.
Yeah, intentional. Yeah. But
in the opinion of the referee. But those are the two lines.
Do you know what the line that was used in this one? His hand was in an unnatural position. But he was just standing there for balance. I mean, he didn't even know the ball hit him, quite literally.
I agree with you.
It's shocking. One of these silly, stupid penalties.
Yeah. And until they sort it out. Look, it's okay watching offsides and you draw lines on the pitch and stuff like that. Then you can sort of say, yeah, look, the line is there, that's it, he was offside or he was onside, or the ball is over the goal line because the referee's watch goes off. All that technology is good for the game, but when it comes to opinion, and you're somebody, no more than the TMOs, George, sitting up in the stand, and they're supposed to be doing their job, and something happens on the pitch. Okay, let's say Michael Oliver missed it. He didn't miss it. He was between the distance between you and me here, away from it. He didn't make the next ball goes out of play. VAR should be on that. Go back. They go back on penalties given in the box when this corner kick's coming in. It just feels wrong.
It can be a free-for-all in that situation, but all for the days, Jerry, is all I'd say, with the great referees, the likes of Howard Webb, who was always decisive, knew what he was at. But can I throw something else, Richie, after the game yesterday? Would you not agree with me this? Now, this is a point, and I thought about this watching that game yesterday. Thomas Frank, and the job he has done at Brentford.
It's unbelievable.
And I've seen the nominees for the manager of the year. Not because my love for the crowd up the N6 isn't great, Mr. Klopp and Mr. Guardiola, Moneybags. If ever a man deserved, I think, to get a fair shot as manager of the year, Thomas Frank,
let's hope, George, next Sunday at home, Brentford at home against Leeds United, that they come up with a similar result that wins that game, and then we don't have to worry about a thing.
That's fine. You're fine, Jerry. I'm with you there. But what I would say is, like, Thomas Frank, most people in this village, when they were asked to nominate their three teams to go down to be relegated, had Brentford in it. Some wise man, I won't mention who he is, certainly didn't have Brentford down in his notes to be relegated. But most people, and anybody that was asked, would have had Brentford. They said it's a fairy tale, they've been promoted, great to see it, but they'll go back down again. But he's made a very smart move. He plumped for Ericsson and convinced Ericsson to come to Brentford. I've seen Ericsson in the flesh a couple of weeks ago.
He's a couple of really good players.
He was excellent. He's a couple of Tony up front is good. He puts himself about the place. But I really think he's done a marvellous job.
That's the point I made earlier on about managers. And no matter what game you're playing, whether you're playing football, hurling, soccer, right? I mean, you remember Connacht had a dodgy spell a few years ago. There was some guy, can't remember who it was, right? They performed badly. The team performed. Now, he didn't last too long, and it's the same in any sport. If the manager isn't respected, you're not going to survive. And the players just don't give their time.
Well, I mean I think it's a collective thing at Everton I have no problem with Frank Lampard. I think he's trying to do the right thing most days he goes out. I think he set them up very well for the Brentford game, but once things start going wrong, it's typical of a side that's in relegation trouble.
Like
the first little setback, it might just be a throw-in going the wrong way. It's as simple as that. And all of a sudden, the jitters start, and Everton are full of jitters. Seamus Coleman's own goal was freaky. But anyway, look at top of the table, I think, while we have a couple of seconds left in this one. Top of the table, Manchester City
Jack
or Liverpool?
Grealish.
City just about.
Mike?
Oh, well, you can't see City losing it at this
George?
Stage.
Anybody but Liverpool.
Well, anyway, I'm going to leave you with that thought. I've got to head off into the night. Our thanks to Doc for engineering for us. We'll be back again next week with another special guest and another panel, or maybe even the same panel that did so well tonight. Mike, Cian, thanks very much. George, fair play. We're off.
Over the Line, in association with Oxy Generation. Oxy Generation is especially helpful for rapid recovery from muscle, joint, ligament, tendon, and bone injury. See oxygeneration.com for more.